Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Sci-Fi's top masters of spells return early in 2018 for season 3 of The Magicians. Creators and executive producers Sarah Gamble and John McNamara join me next in an internet radio exclusive. What did television do best this year about to conclude? And what programming and technology developments will make or break the year ahead? We'll get some direction from TechCrunch correspondent Anthony Ha and MediaGhost columnist Ainsley Andere. Also ahead, our up segments and tomorrow we televise Remembers and our last classic to the outcome of 2017. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York and Blog Talk Radio and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, it's the final Friday of 2017 and tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the New York Television Festival and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted to have you with us wherever you are on this Friday afternoon. 22 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. If you're in the midst of the cold spell like we are and don't think you're going to be in the out of the freeze anytime soon, please, if you go outside, take it easy. Use mass transit if you can. Check in on the loved ones and do yourself a favor. Stay in with us. We'll keep the company here on Blog Talk Radio and on iHeartRadio as well. We have a wonderful 90 minutes in store for you to wrap up our year of the program All About Television, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a call from you. So raise your voice and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is going anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open as well. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use it whenever you can. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. On our way to our first guest, we have some news note quickies. Netflix attracted more than 11 million smart TV or device viewers last weekend to see Bright, the Will Smith starring action film, having an exclusive debut run on Netflix. That's according to Nielsen. A Boston Globe article led to several guests of the syndicated series Dr. Phil were aided in substance abuse by the program staff. The guests appeared on Dr. Phil earlier this decade. No reply yet from Dr. Phil McGraw himself or members of his production team. DirecTV has roped the Cowboy Channel on its basic lineup. The Western Sports and Lifestyle Service began 2018 with 30 million cable and satellite customers. And Rose Marie, the Emmy-nominated Dick Van Dyke Show co-star, who became one of the key celebrities on the Hollywood Squares, died yesterday in California. She was 94. More on Rose Marie and some other recent people who passed away from the TV universe later this hour. And that's news notes for today and for all of 2017. Now joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, the creative executive producers of Sci-Fi's popular series, The Magicians, Sarah Gamble and John McNamara. Sarah and John, season greetings to you.
Hey, how are you?
Very fine, thank you. And Sarah, I want to extend the season's greetings from my Media Village colleague, Ed Martin, who saw you a couple weeks ago at the wedding of the prolific executive producer, Greg Berlanti. So you wanted me to pass along that message to you.
Oh, awesome. That was a pretty great wedding. It was awesome.
So what's it been like for you and John with the sophomore year of The Magicians? It looks like the show got better by a big, big leap.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pretty surprising amount of fun, actually. You go into a TV show and you assume it'll be like a mountain of work and not enough time to do it. But John and I really early on decided we were going to just do whatever we wanted on The Magicians. And that's exactly what we're doing. And it's been really fun.
Exactly. What do you find whatever you want?
Well,
we weren't afraid to feature a boat, a large, expensive, bespoke, multi-masted sailing ship that's featured in the books. And, you know, most TV shows, I think, would and certainly at first, we looked at it and said, well, that's just going to cost a lot of money because getting the boat and shooting on water and all of that can be really tough on production. Luckily, our partner Chris Fisher is a master sailor, And so he really helped kind of guide us.
Yeah. It looked this year, I've been watching Magicians from the start, that this year the characters took on more of a voyage. The first year was sort of like, here these folks are gathered together in this school to sort of learn their craft and magic. And now in this second year, this year, that they really applied it, not only where they are in the modern world, but also in sort of this parallel universe, this parallel forest environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of think of the show as mirroring the stages of development as you come of age and become an adult. So each season when we start writing the show, we talk about those milestones that you hit in your, especially in your early 20s, into your mid-20s. And so if season one was them, you know, first stepping out and trying to figure out what kind of grown people they wanted to be, season two was about starting to assume the responsibilities of adulthood. Of course, when you can do magic and you have just been crowned the High King of a magical land, you know, there are some extra spectacular problems that come with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, when you and Sarah take on the sophomore year of a show, and you, how do you make these milestones happen? How early on in the process, before you even put the scripts to camera, do you determine, here are the milestones, by episode blank this happens, by episode blank that happens, and this is where we want to ultimately get to?
That's a pretty good description of kind of how we lay out a season. And we obviously don't do it alone. We have an incredibly gifted writing staff, and we always try to stay in lockstep with, you know, the studio because they're the bank and they're our creative partners in the network because they get it out to the world and you know, the actors and production. And we try to kind of keep everyone involved and informed as we go, mainly because we don't want to go on, you know, off on such a tangent that suddenly it becomes impossible to produce. That's maybe the single greatest challenge of the show, is it takes place in these two magical realms. And one is particularly challenging to production because it's a completely alien world. You know, and you know, we really want to be responsible producers, but at the end of the season, if there's one penny left in the bank, we've failed.
Yeah.
So we literally try to get it right down to the wire in terms of time and money. Like, we want to squeeze
every drop. That makes a lot of
sweat. Yeah. I mean, the last two episodes are kind of like the last 20 minutes of a Mission Impossible movie, only it's, you know, there's no action, and it's kind of more yelling than shooting. But it's got that kind of high-level, against-the-clock tension, at least for us. Like, from the outside, mm-hmm. it probably looks really boring.
And on top of that, Sarah, this is an ensemble show. This is not a, like, for example, Happy, which just started on Sci-Fi, where it's really Christopher Maloney's mm-hmm. show with Patton Oswalt playing the voice of the animated helper, if you will. This is an ensemble show you've got. So you not only have, you know, where you want the milestones to be for the plot, but also the milestones of each individual character to make sure that they get as much time to develop that character, round it off, as possible.
Yes. To me, that's one of the most fun things about doing The Magicians. It's an extremely character-driven show, and we have this sort of giant array of characters who they're stuck together, but they don't necessarily like each other. And it's a huge percentage of the time we spend in the writer's room. It's just sort of walking through the journey of each character and making sure it feels grounded and real and human, and peppering in a lot of personal anecdotes. I have to say, the characters on the show have gone through a lot of the same stuff that John and I went through when we were their age. And, you know, just to, like, drop in a little spoiler for season three, we have a couple of characters who have become series regulars as the show has gone on. Josh Hoberman and Fen, who is a character we picked up in the magical land of Fillory. And even, you know, going into the room every day and plotting out their stories, I was surprised by how deep and twisty and unusual their stories are in season three. I'm really, really excited for people to see them.
By the way, John, what do people in the magic community, like magicians themselves, what do they think about this show? Do you get any, do you and Sarah get any feedback from them And do you apply any of that feedback in upcoming episodes?
This is probably going to get me a lot of trouble. I don't believe I've ever met a magician in my entire life. I've been to the Magic Castle once. I took my sister when she was 12. That was many, many, many years ago. But I don't believe I've ever met a magician, and now I feel terrible.
Well, you know, there's like magic with a C and magic with a K. That's what this sleight of hand magician / bartender told us at the Magic Castle. There's the magicians who do like card tricks and illusions, and then there are the people who practice magic, who believe in magic and practice magic and do spell work. And one of our writers, Henry Alonzo Myers, is sort of connected to the sleight of hand magic world. So we would have to ask him what the consensus is from them, especially about Quentin, who does the card tricks and stuff. But I have to admit, there's like a small little smattering of Wiccan witches who follow us on Twitter, and I find I really care what they say. I really hope that they like the show and that they feel respected as witches, like in New York City. If we're going to write about them, I want to do them justice.
We're speaking with Sarah Gamble and John McNamara. They are the creators and executive producers of Sci-Fi's popular series, The Magicians, and it comes back on January 10th for season number 3 at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. They're joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour on this 90-minute final 2017 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. The program won't have television. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us this Friday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for Sarah or John or other guests to come, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, TimeAndApple04 by name. Next week, like this week, we'll be with you Tuesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on the program. And coming your way, we're going to kick 2018 off in big style with a two-hour edition. My first guest, a comedy duo who are already getting rave reviews for their new show on Freeform. It's called Alone Together. And we've got the co-stars, the creators and executive producers right here as our lead guests, Ed Levitsky and Benji Oplalo. Then we'll have the executive producer of the new Discovery Channel series that opens the door on a before-close time of police work, unless you were watching shows like Homicide: Life on the Street, where you saw Andre Braugher grill suspects in that place called The Box. We're talking about The Interrogation Room, and Stephen Dost, the executive producer, will be with us. And finally, BYU-TV will have the first new game show of 2018. It's a revival of a Canadian program that ran for several years called Just Like Mom, but in this case, it's Just Like Mom and Dad. And the chief executive officer of the company making the show for BYU, that's Mono Media's Mark Bishop, will be along with us. It's all coming your way from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon to 2 p.m. Pacific. Next Tuesday, day after New Year's, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. By the way, you know, you may be the longest-running show about magic in the history of dramatic television, because we've had shows like The Magician with Bill Bixby, we've had Black Magic with Hal Linden, some which had magicians actually as creative consultants, and you've done three seasons better than that, because they only ran about a year, year and a half. Your show is now three.
I hate to disagree with a host, but you're leaving out Bewitched.
I didn't agree. It didn't deal with a lot in terms of that was more comedy. I'm talking about more drama here. So I guess I thought
it was
a little crazy anyway.
I think if you did Bewitched nowadays, Samantha would totally get down.
Yeah, she would.
Mm-hmm. You know, it could be. I think it's time to reboot that show and just go crazy.
I would watch the crap out of that show.
I saw the movie version with Nicole Kidman was on recently on the network, and I know that film did not do well at the box office, but maybe it's time for somebody to try it one more time to be Bewitched.
Yeah.
It's been 5 or 10 minutes.
Far off, man. Yeah.
Absolutely, as a series. By the way, Entertainment Weekly came out yesterday with an interesting column known as the Top 9 Musical Moments of this year in 2017 television. And guess what? You folks made the list for using the popular Les Miserables song, One Day More, in one of your episodes.
That was very nice of them. Yes.
Yeah.
At what point do you decide we're
going
to do a little musical number? I mean, how did it sort of come about to do it for a second season?
I think Sarah should sort of tell what it was like to observe the process.
I mean, I just don't love musicals as a concept. I appreciate them. I understand why people like them, but I just am usually like, why are they singing right now? Why is this? What? It's just a level of suspension of disbelief that is difficult for me. But John is a huge music theater fan. And so we break ordinary episodes of TV. We figure them out the old-fashioned way. John goes off to write an episode. And somewhere about 2 days before we're supposed to prep the thing and shoot it, he knocks on my door and says, by the way, there's a giant musical number. And that's basically how they come about.
How long? It seems that a lot of shows along this line, The Magicians, The Flash, Flash and Supergirl did one as part of their CW crossover, The Top Number featuring the two stars. It just seems that superhero shows are so much in vogue. Maybe it's because of Buffy the Vampire Slayer doing it so long ago, that whole musical episode. But it just seems that superhero genre shows are more inclined to these musical numbers, maybe more than any other type of show these days.
That's a, I never thought about that, but I think that's a really good point because you're already suspending a tremendous amount of disbelief. You know, I actually quite liked a show that was insanely unpopular in the 80s called Cop Rock that Stephen Boschko produced. And I think the reason it didn't really work for most humans is that there's just something incongruous about seeing cops and judges and lawyers suddenly break into song. And I think because there's already this kind of like fantastical world that you're accepting as reality, music, if it, I think, you know, introduced organically in some way, doesn't really feel like, you know, you're suddenly, you know, kind of trying to mix cake and bacon, although that does sound kind of good right now. You know, it feels more like, you know, taking a glass of milk, you know, to have a big musical number in a world that's already kind of fantastical. But, you know, we do try to challenge ourselves a bit each year in this realm. In the first season, there was a pretty small musical number that we did with the Taylor Swift song called Shake It Off. Second season, we did this much bigger number, The One Day More. This season, we actually set out to break a plot in which all the musical numbers move the plot forward or reveal character and is much more integrated. And that'll be episode 9
of season 3. Tune in to
find out.
Tune in to find out if we manage to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we do nothing if not say, oh, let's not do the same thing that's really, you know, easy. Let's, like, totally... Let's try and do something that could be a complete disaster. You know, and that's what we've tried now, season 3. So you have that to look forward to, the high tightrope with no net and lots of singing.
Well, I'm looking forward to that episode a lot. I'm curious to see what songs you're going to use, any original songs, what the choreography is going to be like, again, because you're an ensemble show, you can, like, use different people for different numbers and see how it all works out.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I felt strongly about doing it is that each thing we did, the little bit we did in season 1, the slightly bigger thing we did in season 2, revealed how incredibly talented the cast is and how many of them are legitimate singers. I mean, really well-trained, really with a theatrical background. Others are just surprisingly naturally talented. All of them bring incredible personality and kind of, you know, style. And unfortunately, we've not yet cracked the code on composing a completely original score. That may be the challenge of season 4, if Sarah doesn't mind. But what we're doing here is kind of what they call on Broadway a jukebox musical. We're taking various songs from a whole wide range of genres, and we've built a plot around them.
Well, I think that will be something to look forward to. And again, congratulations on the EW recognition for One Day More. I actually have to see the number because it's playing on the EW site, and it's a wonderful number, wonderfully staged. And without giving too much away, I love the ending. I love the ending where the people that they're fighting against
and
the little thing.
Also, congratulate the crew and the director, Rebecca Johnson, and our directing producer, Chris Fisher, and all the actors, because that was a shitty, rainy, windy day when they marched across that field trying to look bold.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did that song proud. It's one of the great musical numbers of recent decades, and from Les Miserables, and
you know,
it was really done very, very well.
Thanks. And I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the equal contribution of the co-writer of that episode, Elle Lipson. She did a great job, and in fact, she was the one who nudged me toward One Day More, because she was a much bigger Les Mis fan, and I'm glad she did.
Sarah, what else can we look forward to besides that episode of music and song in season 3?
What else can you look forward to? Well, monsters, if that's your cup of tea, creatures. One of my favorite things is that we continually get to invent new, really intense, magical creatures. We have a brilliant team that's both physical effects and then also computer-generated visual effects. So we have all of this power at our fingertips. And if you've been seeing promos for season 3, you have seen the first creature you will meet, and that's the Great Cock, played by Farhan Tahir. And he sort of sets our characters on their quest for the season. But he's the first of many creatures who, you know, I'm really proud of them. We spend a long time, we create them with love, and our teams make them look amazing.
Incidentally, we should let you know that guest 227 has just joined our chat room, SimonApple04. My name, so thanks for coming in. If you have a question or comment for our guest, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. We're talking with Sarah Gamble and John McNamara. They are the crazy executive producers of Magicians, coming your way with season 3 on Sci-Fi next Wednesday night, January, actually the week after, Wednesday, January 10th, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. The Winter Fly from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on the last Friday afternoon of 2017, 20 degrees south of the hour here in the Big Apple. If you have a question or comment, give us a call or use our chat room. Next Friday on Tomorrow We Televise, night in addition for you, we'll kick it off with Jeff Kraft. He's the executive producer of ABC's new game show, Child Support, hosted by Fred Savage, and featuring Ricky Gervais and a number of charming kids who are going to try to help contestants win big cash and prizes. Then we will have more from Stephen Dose, because in addition to doing the interrogation room, he's also involved in the production company behind it, Redbubble Media. He and Kevin Fitzpatrick will be with us. And finally, we'll have from Carnival Corporation, the cruise line people, John Padgett. He's one of their chief executives. He's also the overseer of a new series premiering later in January on Univision. It's called La Gran Sorpresa, The Great Surprise. What year that's all about. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Sarah, before you did The Magicians, you had a nice run as both one of the original writers and story editors of Supernatural, which is still chugging along well on the CW. What about that experience really helps you in doing The Magicians?
I learned a lot that helps us with Magicians. I mean, that's a really ambitious show that is produced for a modest budget, so that was sort of my graduate school for that. But I think more than anything else, the thing I learned from Supernatural was that it's never really about the explosions or the blood or the guts or the monsters. At the end of the day, if you want a show with longevity, you really have to make it about the relationship between the main characters. I believe that's why Supernatural is in season 13, because people really care about the relationship between those two brothers. So, you know, hard to replicate, cannot be duplicated, but you can certainly go into your next TV show knowing that people care about the humans at the center of the story.
And John, some people should know that you were involved very heavily in a marvelous film with Bryan Cranston that won him an Oscar nomination 2 years ago called Trumbo, about the blacklist of screenwriter Dalton Trumbo. What was it like doing that series, and what do you bring out of that experience into doing The Magicians?
My main reaction to having done Trumbo is I have been completely ambivalent about ever writing or producing another movie, because that experience was so perfect. I'm literally kind of, I feel like it's almost testing the gods to try to replicate it in any way. It took a long time to pull it together, you know, and that was one of the things that it kind of prepared me for with the Magicians, because there were some uphill battles on the Magicians. You know, weirdly, we shot Trumbo in 2014, the fall of 2014 in New Orleans, and we shot the pilot of the Magicians in the late fall of 2014 in New Orleans. So we shot them back to back. And in fact, a lot of the same crew that worked on Trumbo worked on the Magicians, because they have really talented folks down in New Orleans. But, you know, I think it doubles back to what Sarah said, which is, I think that the reason that story is interesting is because of the characters. And I was very fortunate to have the cooperation of Dalton Trumbo and friends who are still alive, and a wonderful biography to base the screenplay on. And, you know, every day, you know, working with the actors and then the director, Jay Roach, every day was about trying to just make these characters as human as possible. And I won't say it was easier than the Magicians. It was just different because I had so much history to draw upon and so many real people. You know, I could not have invented an antagonist like Hedda Hopper, nor could I have ever hoped for a better actress than Helen Mirren. So once the script was sort of set and Helen was pretty happy and the director was happy, my job was to get the fuck out of the way and go to craft service.
So before we go, how long do you and John see the Magicians running on Sci-Fi? How far advanced do you see this all playing out?
I don't want to jinx anything, but we certainly have story ideas for many seasons to come. So we just hope people keep watching and tell people to watch so that Sci-Fi keeps asking us to make it. We know what we want our season 4 and 5 and 6 to be. So just, you know, all they have to do is just stick us in a room and we'll write it.
But before that, there's season 3 to get underway, and it does. Wednesday, January 10th, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Sci-Fi. Check your local news for where the network is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, go to www.sci-fi.com/the-magicians. That's www.sci-fi.com/the-magicians. Sarah Gamble and John McNamara, creative executive producer of the series, thank you both for joining us on this final Friday of 2017. A delight to have you both aboard. Congratulations on what you've done so far. And hopefully, like you said, Sarah, many, many more seasons to come. And for both of us, all of you,
thank you.
To you and your cast and crew, a wonderful, wonderful new year ahead.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
You're welcome, Sarah and John. Take care. All the greatest.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Sarah Gamble and John McNamara joining us live from Los Angeles. More Bobby Televised coming your way, but first, some final words of the year from our terrific sponsor, Audible.com. It is not too late, even though it's past Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, to get a gift for yourself or someone you love to start the year on. And how about this? The gift of sound, the gift of audio. Audio is the new listening, and Audible.com can definitely transform the way you hear the world. All it takes is getting a 1 month trial of the service and one free audiobook. A free audiobook like, for example, the great Ken Follett adventure novel and historical novel, too. The Pillars of the Earth was made into a wonderful miniseries on Starz several years ago. Rolla Ball, who's the executive producer of that miniseries, was with us when that program happened. And it got some nominations from various organizations, too. It was founded by John Lee, and you can get it with a free trial subscription to Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from, like The Pillars of the Earth, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, get one free audio book, 1 month trial, and great customer service because Audible is owned by Amazon.com. And don't forget, Audible is a proud development partner of the New York Television Festival. So give yourself or someone you know for this coming year the gift of audio and what it can bring for you and so many hours of great listening pleasure. Audible.com transforms the way you hear the world. Once again, for a free audio book and trial subscription, audibletrial.com/televised. We come back here in New York. We're joined by Anthony Ha from TechCrunch. We'll talk about the year of TV technology and what 2018 can bring. And also, we'll have our class trivia question of the week. In our segment, Mark's Bobby Televisor members gets all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's over Friday night at Casa. Check out the wonderful comedy tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And you're also listening to us on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. You can check out recent episodes just by going to iHeartRadio.com, put the Bobby Televisor in the search bar, click, and that's all you need to do. Welcome back to the Bobby Televised, our 90-minute edition wrapping up 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. More great guests coming away in the hour ahead. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Well, it's been a year of all sorts of unique developments in television, both in programming and on technology. We'll have the programming side first with a friend of mine from Media Village. That's at the top of the hour. But right now, joining us live from New York, the correspondent from TechCrunch, we've had on the show before, Anthony Ha. Anthony, season's greetings to you.
Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back, Anthony. For you, what was the big TV tech story of the year?
I don't know that there was, like, in terms of, like, hardware, there was, like, one overriding trend. I think it was the sense that, you know, all these things that we've been talking about for a while, whether that's, you know, building in these streaming services natively into the television, some of these, like, voice interfaces, that all these things are becoming closer to becoming sort of what we expect from our television, that it's not, you know, this kind of cool thing that we see at CES every year, which I know we're going to talk more about. But actually something that is starting to become something that we can just, you know, that we expect from every television we buy.
It seems that the big overriding story from this person's perspective was the fact that the American public is now really embracing smart TV sets and smart devices. 60% of U.S. households, according to Nielsen, have them. That's probably a bigger percentage now because of sales over Cyber Monday, Black Friday, all through November, Super Saturday last weekend, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems that this is how people are watching and using not just television from the broadcasting cable networks, but Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Crackle, smart TV apps, ways to play video, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems that also along the way, particularly the last few months, something else has happened, which is artificial intelligence, Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, Bixby, that is now incorporated into the set and the device. What do you make of that development? And you get a sense that the American public is embracing that too.
I don't think they're embracing it yet. I think it's something that's being experimented with. I think it's very important to these different companies like Amazon and Google because just as I think they see the smart speakers that they've been selling is really just sort of the first step in getting people on board into this sort of vision of like a connected home. And I think the assistant in the television is the next step in that. I mean, I think it can certainly be very useful because, you know, anyone who's tried to type in, a search term on a smart TV, you know that it can be very, very, like, frustrating when you're, like, pushing in each separate letter and you don't really have a good input for that. So voice makes a lot of sense. I don't know that it's, going to be, the main interface in the future. I think it's certainly an interesting feature and it's going to be important to these companies.
For years, people have talked about the idea that for interactive television, whether it is storytelling, commerce, merchandising, shopping, banking, et cetera, to happen, that the American public needed to find a way to communicate beyond just pressing a button on the remote control, whether it's using their voice, their body language, their hands or fingers. Does the introduction of AI into these sets and devices, could that, do you think, next year trigger this new age of interactive television? Are we finally ready to see a lean-forward experience in, like, simple form start to gel?
I think it's possible. I mean, I think what you're going to see next year is lots of experimentation with this, and voice is certainly going to be one of the interfaces. I think, like, I mean, there we haven't exhausted the possibilities of other things, like, and this is less on TV, but certainly in terms of interactive video, just like a basic point-and-click interface, on your laptop in a browser, I think certainly still offers, like, interesting opportunities, whether you're watching YouTube or something like that. So I don't think voice is going to be the interface for interactive television. I'm also not entirely sure to what extent people are hungering for an interactive experience on their TV specifically, but I think you're certainly going to see some experiments with it.
Well, we've got one experiment going on with Apple TV, and that's an app called Mosaic, which was put together by the independent film director Steven Soderbergh. It's a miniseries where you get the chance to really build the miniseries from scratch using this app. And Soderbergh's own vision of this miniseries, which has Sharon Stone among the stars, will be on HBO as a 6-7-hour miniseries special next month. Are you hearing anything about what is going on with Apple TV with Mosaic and whether, in fact, that may be one of the trends coming up next year where we're going to see some of these experiments deal with the TV program itself, where you either build it from scratch or at various points in the program you can dictate somehow or some way which way the show goes, which way the character goes?
I have certainly been hearing about Mosaic. I haven't had a chance to try it myself. I mean, I think that part of the issue is that all of these platforms, I mean, including Apple TV, I mean, they're still relatively, you know, small in audience base compared to, you know, just the enormous footprint of smart TVs in general and of these, you know, other types of devices. And so I think that it is, and this has also been the same with experiments in VR, which are not exactly what you're talking about, but I think get to that same question of, like, interactivity. And so I think I assume that somebody like Soderbergh or you know, someone like Doug Liman, who's also experimented with VR, I mean, I think they really see this as a way to sort of, not necessarily that this is going to be the next big thing, but that there are a lot of different possibilities right now, and they need to be experimenting with all of them because they need to understand these new tools so they're not sort of taken by surprise. I don't think anyone is expecting this to become, you know, a mass phenomenon, you know, again, in the next 12 months, especially. It's hard to imagine that, you know, something that's Apple TV specific, but, I mean, I could be wrong, but that's my feeling.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Apple TV, and I want to come back to something else you mentioned with VR and augmented reality, but it seems that Tim Cook, the head of Apple, and Eddie Q, the head of Apple, the overseer of Apple TV, seem to this year have so many opportunities to really showcase Apple TV and blew them, whether it was the Worldwide Developer Conference where Tim Cook spent less than 90 seconds covering Apple TV off the bat, or the big iPhone conference where it's 15 minutes but they don't show many apps, including some of the newest apps. And it seems it's not just Apple TV. It's a lot of these smart TV set makers and device makers who just seem to be like operating as if they're in a secret society and they don't want to tell people, whether it's you and me and the rest of the press, or the public at large, either by showing up here in New York or being in Los Angeles or outside Silicon Valley and showing people. It's like the American public is discovering what they can do with these smart sets and devices for themselves. They're not getting help from these smart set makers. One of the few exceptions is the Amazon Fire ad campaign that ran over the Christmas season, where you got a sense from Amazon Fire, hey, here's what you can do with our device.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I do get the sense that, and this is, you know, purely anecdotal, but just talking to friends who own smart TVs, they're almost not aware that that's what they have, you know, that they see them primarily just as TVs, and then they realize, oh, right, I can watch Netflix on this, I can watch Hulu on this, you know, there are these other capabilities, but they're not being sold primarily for those capabilities. It's more just like, hey, here's a TV, and it has everything that you want on it. I think specifically about Apple, I mean, I think they've blown a couple of opportunities here. Certainly, one is just, you know, on the content side, you know, like having not, you know, really kind of coming out with some fairly not great programming this year. I think it's really, you know, lowered some of the excitement around any future original content they do. But I imagine also that when they're thinking about the future of Apple TV, a lot of that is probably really about next year and some of these new shows they're going to be launching.
Yeah. Do we have any sense, by the way, how those new shows, we're talking about the revival of Amazing Stories with Steven Spielberg, the Reese Witherspoon morning show, Dramedy, and now Ron Moore's from Outlander, Mouse of Galactica's new space opera, how this is going to happen. And by the way, I've checked Apple's website. They have not come out with a press release on any of those shows. What's your sense about how they're doing with them, and any sense as to where they're going to play?
My sense is that they're not, I mean, and this is, you know, just from reading probably a lot of the same articles that you're reading, the plan is that it is going to be a standalone service. It's not going to be just folded into Apple Music, I don't know that how committed they are to that strategy right now, but some, I think it seems like they're seeing this as a launch of a new subscription TV service, which, you know, these would all be folded into. I think all this stuff is very early right now. I mean, I'm, you know, it seems like they've sort of signed the talent deals and presumably they're kind of going off and writing and figuring out budgeting and casting and all that. So I think a lot of it is not totally clear yet. But I do think it'll definitely be sort of an Apple, you know, I don't know what the naming is going to be, but it'll basically be, you know, Apple's version of Netflix, which we've been hearing about for years and years. And you know, knock on wood, we may finally get that next year.
You're hearing Anthony Ha, one of the top correspondents to TechCrunch, the very comprehensive website. They also do TechCrunch Disrupt events all over the country, including in Silicon Valley and in New York, which they do every April and May. Next one will be coming next spring. And Anthony's with us live this half hour from New York on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on our final episode of the program All About Television for 2017. 22 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Yes, we are in the freeze. It's going to continue at least through New Year's Day and beyond. And if you have a question or comment for Anthony, give us a call. Number to use, 646-652-2906. Or be in our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Once again, we are with you next Tuesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, 2-hour edition coming your way next Tuesday afternoon. And our lead guest will be from the new Freeform series, Alone Together, that premieres next month. Esther Bovitsky and Benji Aflano, they're the co-stars, the creators and executive producers, already getting great reviews for the show, and they're with us live as our lead guest next Tuesday, day after New Year's, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. We'll kick 2018 off high gear right here on Tomorrow We Televised. Before we get Anthony to CES, which is coming up in 2 weeks, one of the first big events of the tech year and the TV year, I might add, in 2018, talk about virtual reality or meta reality. It seems that with virtual reality, nobody was trying to do anything for the television set, and VR itself seemed to go a couple of steps backwards because people were not getting into the headgear.
I think that's right. I mean, because, for a while, we really had this sort of very different, like these two different layers to the market. One was these, you know, fairly expensive headsets that also required you, you know, that you'd spend a lot of money on the headset, and then you had to spend a lot of money on a really good computer that it could connect to. Or you basically had a phone that you put in a headset, and like, so you basically had a really cheap, not great experience, or a really, really high-end experience. And I think you're starting to get, you know, like Oculus and some other, and I think Google are starting to talk about, you know, actually doing a standalone headset that's actually good, for lack of a better word. So I think they're not giving up on that yet, but it does also seem like some of the interest has kind of shifted away from virtual reality and more towards, you know, augmented reality with things that like Apple is doing with ARKit and things like that. So, I mean, I think, again, none of this has you know, really taken off the way maybe some people have predicted. But I do think that certainly the headsets have been a big problem for a long time.
Is anybody, Anthony, working on augmented reality as a TV set venture? It seems to me that could be a really good app.
I guess because I think we think of augmented reality being more sort of out in the world, and so it's incorporating IP from TV, whether that, you know, I mean, Niantic is doing really interesting stuff. Obviously, they kind of popularized a lot of this with Pokemon Go, and then they're going to be doing that Harry Potter game in the next year or two. I think it's harder for me to see. I think there have been some lightweight experiments and things that I remember. You know, at the Tribeca Film Festival, there were some things that had an augmented reality component in, like, a real space. But for the most part, it seems like, again, a lot of that energy doesn't seem like directed at the TV set. It seems like they sort of think of it as, on the one hand, we've got these headsets, and we have to figure out what to do with these headsets. We're figuring out stuff, you know, to do on the phones. And then on the other hand, we have TVs, which, you know, certainly we're bringing on a lot more sort of digital, nonlinear content. But they don't see it, I think, as part of that same continuum that, at least, that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. All right, and let's go to CES, which is coming up in 2 weeks from Las Vegas. It's the big consumer electronics show, and it gets a huge crowd every year. I think thousands of exhibitors and so on. What looks like the big TV story coming out of there?
Well, I mean, every year there are sort of, you know, just like new sets and new sort of like, you know, kind of taking it to the next level. So I'm sure there will be 8K sets. I think there's some speculation about, you know, OLED sets. And, I mean, I think that's all interesting. You're going to see probably continuing just more and more, you know, smart TVs getting smarter. I think it seems like the predominant narrative, at least going into the event, is this question of Amazon versus Google. And, you know, sort of both Google opening up Google Assistant, Amazon opening up Alexa and trying to just integrate with all the devices they can, and whether or not, you know, TV is going to be one of the areas where they're having that battle, and whether you're going to see some more integration announcements on the smart TV side for both Amazon and Google.
Now, last week, and we reported on this, Amazon announced a web browser for Fire TV, whether it be on the streaming stick and also, I believe, on the smart TV sets themselves, where you can either get Mozilla Firefox or Amazon's own browser, Silk, and you can go to any website you want, whether video, audio, sound, et cetera, and watch it to your heart's content. Do you think we're going to see more effort in that area, where it's like the web browser where you can get the full web experience on the TV set?
I really think that feels to me very much like an intermediate step, because I've at least, I have an Xbox at home where there is a browser that you can use, and it's not a great experience, and I don't think it was necessarily meant to. I mean, it feels like sort of a stopgap of just saying, hey, there may be some things that we don't support yet, some other places you want to check out, and so why don't we have the browser there as, you know, just so you don't, you know, so you have that option. But I think the focus is going to continue to be on, you know, native apps, because it's hard to imagine that I think the apps are just going to have a much better experience. Again, because the, you know, on a TV, the interface is so limited. Again, maybe we'll see that open up with voice, but right now the interface is so limited that I just don't think browsers are really going to be the way to go.
Where is the developer community? I'm talking about the app developer community when it comes to creating apps directly for television. When Apple TV announced itself, the current version, 2 years ago, again, Tim Cook said, and he really declared it, the future of TV is apps. He showcased Silk Group, he showcased Airbnb, he showcased Zillow. We now know that you can use Uber on some of these sets and devices, Papa John's, Domino's Pizza, StubHub, Great Tickets. Do we have any idea where the app community is in terms of developing specific TV possibilities?
It really seems like it's kind of, I don't think it's dead or sputtered out, but I think that it doesn't really seem, on the startup side particularly, it really doesn't seem to be a focus anymore. I think that there was sort of an initial burst of excitement, but it just, you haven't seen sort of like a breakout app, and I think you need something that sort of captures the imagination and excites other people to sort of follow in that direction. And instead, what you had is, of course, that, you know, the major media players, the major streaming players, want a presence on every device, and so they'll build their own apps across all these different platforms. But beyond that, I mean, it's not to say that there haven't been other kinds of apps, but you just haven't had that kind of success story. And I don't think, you know, at least in conversations with developers, it doesn't seem like the Apple TV is the first thing to come up.
CES, by the way, will be taking place in 2 weeks in Las Vegas. It is the biggest showcase of its kind, both for consumer electronics and for television. And a lot of TV people, by the way, will be there. We're speaking with Anthony Ha. He's one of the key correspondents of TechCrunch, the popular website, and also event producer of all those disrupt conferences from all over the world. He's with us live in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're with us as well. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple. And if you have a question or comment for Anthony, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. We'll also have our updating our Tomorrow Be Televised Remembrance tribute from Tuesday. And coming up for our next half hour, we'll get into the programming side of what went down this year and what could go down next with my colleague from Media Village, columnist Ashley Andari. And that's coming up at the top of the hour. What do you think will be the – is there any possibility of a sleeper story coming out TV-wise from CES?
Like you said, a sleeper story?
Sleeper story. Something that's on the radar screen that you think could be.
You know, I do think that I wonder if you get to a point, maybe it's more like a not, like sort of a counter story, which is just, I'm curious to what extent you can keep sort of making these TVs, you know, fancier and fancier and higher and higher resolution, And at one point you just sort of hit a wall where at a certain point you just kind of who cares about 8K versus 16K and so on. I don't know that that's going to be, an issue at this CES, but I think there's if you've been to CES for several years, it really starts to feel like a little ridiculous, how advanced some of these, what the claims that they're making about some of these televisions. And you start to say, I don't really think that there are that many people, who are that excited about, just adding more pixels. And so I think it's not to say that you won't see continued development in that area, but I think it'll be, it'll be the some of the there might be a sense that some of the innovation is moving elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I get two more subjects in before we go, Anthony. And the first is ATSC 3.0. The Federal Communications Commission made that the new law of the land earlier this fall. How much effort do you think, or how much notice is going to be at CES for TV stations, other players using ATSC 3.0 in all sorts of ways, whether it's getting more multicast channels on the air or whether it's feeding content directly to smart TV sets and devices?
I really haven't heard too much conversation about it. That's not to say that it won't be there, but I think a lot of that conversation kind of happens, in the back channel and sort of, I don't think you're going to hear a lot of talk about this at the keynotes or at the booths. There may be, other industry areas where that is coming up, but I don't think it's really going to be a focus.
Yeah. And finally, Anthony, 2 months ago, we had the people from a company called Singular DTV that is working on developing an end-to-end system for new TV content and maybe even smart TV apps to be created, funded, promoted, developed, and ultimately distributed using a mix of blockchain and cryptocurrency technologies, in particular Ethereum. You hear blockchain is like the rave. You, of course, hear about Bitcoin all over the place. Do you see, or does anybody at TechCrunch see a role for cryptocurrency and or blockchain in television, either to try to get new programming off the ground or new technology or apps off the ground?
To be honest, it's not something I've thought about too much. I mean, certainly people have talked about, at this point, it seems like everyone's trying to apply, some kind of crypto or blockchain angle to pretty much anything. I think the one I've heard about the most in the media space is more on sort of the advertising side, because there's that interest in that layer of transparency. I think the idea of some sort of crowdfunding element and using blockchain as a component, I think, is interesting, and certainly, I think we're at a point where we definitely need to find new models for getting new shows off the ground. I think what I worry about is to what extent is the crypto or blockchain aspect really enabling something new, and to what extent is that just sort of a gimmick because that's sort of the hot new thing right now. And my feeling is that a lot of the stuff that I've been seeing is that it's sort of more on the gimmick side.
Well, I think we'll certainly find out this coming year. The Singular DTV people we had on, and I also had a chance to see them in person here in New York at the International Emmy Awards Festival in early November, they will acknowledge this is virgin territory here, and it is tough to get the handle of a system that uses both cryptocurrency and blockchain. But it definitely bears staying on the radar screen at least a little bit. We'll see if they can pull it together. They're hoping to do it by the end of next year. And if they don't do it, will somebody else do it? We will have to wait and see. What would you like, personally, in terms of television, what would you like to see happen next year?
I think we're at this point where, on the content side, there are just so many different services and so many different subscriptions that you can try out. And I think that is ultimately a really healthy thing. But, there is almost this sort of craze of, every media company has to have their own direct path to the consumer, and that means that they're sort of holding back more content from something like a Netflix. And I'd like to see, not necessarily, I don't want it to consolidate down to a few big players, but just a little bit more of an open attitude, that it's not sort of all or nothing, that it's not I have to have my app, it's going to be a big deal, but more of a sense that you know, that people are going to be playing with others, and that they're going to be betting certainly on the idea of launching their own app, but that, you know, having a real place on, you know, some of these other services like Netflix is also important. That's not to say, I think a lot of companies certainly have that Netflix as part of the strategy now, but I'd love to see that, you know, become more of the conversation again, rather than just, all right, I got to launch my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really super point. Personally, I would like to see the Consumer Technology Association, the people behind CES, do what they did several years ago to promote ultra-high-definition television, which is now the standard for most major smart TV sets, and that is to promote smart TV sets and the apps that people can use. As Michael and Sam MediaLink said in a public discussion a couple of weeks ago, I know 10% of what I can do with my smartphone. I don't know the other 90%, and it's the 90% that could impact my life for the greater. I think that's what's needed right now, and I think Gary Shapiro and the gang at Consumer Technology Association have got to get on the bus and develop a similar campaign for smart TV sets and device usage. I think it make a big difference with the American public, which is going to, I think, become more and more involved with these devices as 2018 and beyond happens. If you want to see more of Anthony's work, all you got to do is go to www.techcorps.com 24/7. You'll find his work, his wonderful reporting, and also his fellow colleagues as well. Techcorps.com. And if you get a chance, if you're in the area of a TechCorps and stuff conference, check it out. It's a really good event to go to, and you really get a great pulse on where technology overall, not just TV, but technology overall is going. Anthony Hahn, thank you again for joining us. It's been a pleasure. All the best to you for a great, and your colleagues, for a wonderful new year ahead. And have a great time at CES.
Thanks a lot. Happy New Year.
You're welcome. All the greatest, Anthony. Take care.
You too.
Anthony Hahn from TechWise joining me live here in New York. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. I'm sorry to say that for our final question of the year, we did not get a winner. But we did have a lot of great winners from all over the country that did win over the course of this year. Our final question of the year, which we had both last week and this week, is this. Name the prison in Orange is the New Black. And the answer, Litchfield Penitentiary. Litchfield Penitentiary was the answer, and nobody got it. So we'll start nice and fresh with a new question on January 2nd of 2018. And if you know the answer when we put the question out there, you will win the new book previously on X-Men by Eric Lowell, who was one of the developers and main writers of that popular cartoon series on Fox TV Saturday morning schedule in the 1990s. He was on our show a few weeks ago, along with his wife, who was also involved in the show as a writer. And you can pick a copy up if you get involved in our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. So check us out on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Listen for the question. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name where you're emailing from. If you missed the question on Tuesday, no problem. I'll post it Wednesday morning on Facebook and on my own Twitter outpost. At UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. But remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So all the very best. And now quickly, an update where we follow up on guests and topics we've had in this program. On Tuesday, we did our annual feature, Tomorrow We Televise Remembers. We're sad to say we have to update that feature from Tuesday because of a number of incidents that either we learned about or that happened over the course of this past week. As some of you may have heard at the top of the show, Rose Marie, the wonderful Sally Rogers of the Dick Van Dyke Show, won 3 Emmy Awards as Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy for her work. Later became one of the key elements of the Hollywood Squares, both on NBC and in syndication. She passed away last night at the age of 94. By the way, she was a big social media follower right up to her dying breath. Also passing away this week, unfortunately because of an accident here in New York, Jim Burns, the co-creator of MTV Unplugged, one of the great seminal series in the history of that network. He was hit by a taxi earlier this week in New York, and then he passed away at a hospital because of his injuries. And two other people who also passed away recently, maybe the last of the great game show producers and creators of the first era of game show success in the 1956. I'm talking about Merrill Heater. He and his partner, Robert Quickly, gave us one of the shows I grew up watching, Video Village, that got Monty Hall his first big claim to national fame. And then later on, they were the creators of the Hollywood Squares, one of the longest-running game shows in all of daytime and nighttime game show history. And on his own, he also versus the series High Rollers with Quigley, that one quickly passed away. Keeter kept going, including the popular series with Alfonso Rivera's host, Catch 21. You can still see reruns of that daytime on GSN. And finally, he made his way both on radio and then later on television as the sidekick and then really the big partner to Hannity, Sean Hannity. Hannity and Combs, we're talking about Alan Combs, whose partnership with Sean Hannity on television lasted over a decade on the Fox News Channel. He passed away also earlier this year. So that wraps up our Tamami Television members for 2017. When we come back, we'll have our Media Village colleague, columnist Ashley Andre, join us. His thoughts about where TV programming went this year, where it could go next. We'll get to him after we pause at the bottom of the hour, at the top of the hour, for webinar notification. It's blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. With 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the best and worst of 2017. Check it out tomorrow. That's Saturday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And thank you for tuning us in as well on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Welcome back to the Marvin Televised, our final edition of 2017, and welcome to those of you just joining us along the way here on BleedTR or on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at the top of the hour. 22 degrees here in New Weber, York. We're in the freeze. It's going to stay that way at least through the first few days of 2018. Sound out, family, live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our next guest, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere to catch us across the country, around the world here on BTR. And we've got our chat room going as well, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And now joining us live from Long Island, my wonderful colleague covering the world of programming at MediaVillage.com. It's a pleasure to welcome for the very first time here, Ainsley Andrade. Ainsley, thanks for joining us, and season's greetings to you.
Season's greetings to you. How
are
you doing?
Ainsley, can you hear me? Yeah, you're on the air, Ashley.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I mean, Ainsley, you're on the air. Can you hear me? Hello, Ainsley?
Hello?
Hang on for 1 second, everybody. Let's give Ainsley and Driver a tie. Let's try it again. Ainsley, can you hear me now?
Hello? Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Ainsley.
Hey, how you doing, Simon?
Very fine, thank you. Season's greetings to you. What sort of a year is it like covering TV programming?
What sort of year? It was a funny one. Like, literally and figuratively. We saw some things that we hadn't seen before, in my opinion, but I was overall pretty pleased with the results. There were a lot of hits comedy-wise throughout the year that weren't expected.
Mm-hmm. And it was also a year that we may have seen over 500 original scripted shows for the very first time all over the place, broadcast networks, cable networks, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and so on and so forth. It seemed that the quality of a lot of the new shows that came out was quite high or close to high.
Yeah, I would say so. I agree.
Mm-hmm. I saw your list in Media Village of your top 10 shows of the year, and one thing I noticed is that you really were very high on shows on broadcast and cable television this year. There was not one entry on your list of top 10 that came out of the likes of Netflix or Hulu or Amazon and so forth. How did you get together to make that list?
I actually did. A few of these shows are actually from Hulu. But I stream pretty much everything. So, these were just the shows that I gravitated towards throughout the year. And, I felt like these were the ones, most worth giving some praise to.
Mm-hmm. And, let's go, from 10 to 1. Your number 10 was one that a lot of people ranked very high. That was American Gods on Stars, the Neil Gaiman adaptation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great show. I was really taken in by the imagery. It's very dramatic and well put together. I feel like they really it's almost as if they go frame by frame, trying to give you a different painting in each one.
Mm-hmm. And a great cast and very well put together from opening title on. It and I thought, by the way, one of the scenes that dealt with slavery was one of the most powerful scenes all year.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
At number 9, number 8, you had two Fox shows. One was probably a show that, at number 8, was one of those divided in terms of critical attention. That's The Orville, the new show from the creator of Family Guy. And the other one was The Mick, which really turned out to be one of the sleeper shows this year.
I don't know. I kind of knew it was going to be good going in. I don't think I don't know why there was like a lack of faith on most people's parts, but I'm a big fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I'm a huge fan of Caitlin Olsen, and her character was so different from who she not very different, but it was like a different version of the woman that she plays in It's Always Funny. But this was like a version of that show that was it was almost equally as absurd, but somehow cleaner, you know what I mean? I could watch that with more members of my family than I could watch an episode of It's Always Sunny with.
Mm-hmm. And then with The Orville, Seth MacFarlane, of course, the Family Guy creator, like I said, this is a show that a lot of people are wondering, is he trying to parody Star Trek? Is he trying to model Star Trek? And he really liked it. And that's why he put it up at number 8.
Yeah, I didn't expect to like this show at all, to be honest. My initial reaction was that it was going to be something like pretty much Family Guy in space. And when I did see it, I was I did really enjoy it. I'm of the generation where Star Trek The Next Generation was my Star Trek. And this hits so many of the same notes. I don't, as far as it being like a parody or if he's trying to copy it, I feel like it's more of an homage. You know what I mean? This is his. Anybody who's a creative and a fan of that type of thing wants to do their own version of that. And I think that's what he did. This is his own Star Trek without it being Star Trek explicitly.
Incidentally, what did you think of Star Trek Discovery, the new version of Star Trek that pocketed CBS All Access?
I liked it. It was a good mix of episodic television writing and an almost feature film budget. It looked really good, and the actors were really good. I forget her name, but the woman who plays Michael Burnham, she had moments where she was playing a half Vulcan woman, so she had to like be devoid of emotion but at the same time have like very strong emotions bubbling beneath the surface, and I feel like she pulled that off pretty well. I don't know. It's one of those shows that people either hate or love, but I'm a fan of it.
At number 7, you had a show that is now in its 6th season on ABC and just got into syndication around the country, The Goldbergs. And for number 6, you had the one show on TNT that one of the two shows on TNT that really made it this year, one Cause, with you, the Action Company, as people down in Miami operating their own business and getting involved with organized crime. What do you think about both Claus and the Goldbergs?
The Goldbergs is really funny. I don't know exactly what it is. I mean, like, all the jokes are, like, perfectly timed. The cast is lovable. I'm a huge fan of, I'm forgetting her name now, but the woman who plays the mom, Wendy McLendon Covey, that's her name. I remember her from Reno 911. And so she's been doing like this comedy acting for a while, and I feel like this is her role. Like, this is the role I can't imagine anybody else doing this. And it's just a really funny show.
And Claude, speaking of Claude, you have another alumni of Reno, and that's Neil P. Nash.
Yeah, I really like her in Claws. Claws was I didn't know what I was getting with Claws. I knew it was in the beginning. I knew it was like her running a nail salon, and that was pretty much it. I mean, the style of nails that she does—that's something that I saw like bubbling up a lot on Instagram. It was like a new trend, and then like shortly after that, I saw the show come out. So. I guess it was well timed, but when you actually start watching the show, it's a really good crime drama. Like there's elements of comedy in it and stuff like that, but like she plays a badass, and like she runs this nail salon that apparently is just full of badass women, and so something about them gets you really rooting for them. So I like it. It's the style and everything about it. I really like the guy who plays her boyfriend in the show, Roller. He's a I don't know. I just feel like he nailed that role. But it's a good show.
By the way, TNT had one of my favorite performances of the year. That was the show Good Behavior with Michelle Dockery in the lead role. And also, somebody who grew up that I saw on the news, Zorro. He was Pedro, the mute. I think it's Juan Diego Baca, who is the co-star of that show. I think that Michelle and Juan make a great pair. And Michelle Dockery's performance, I think, was one of the most underrated performances of the whole year. And I'm happy that Good Behavior got a second season this season on TNT. We're speaking with my colleague from MediaVillage.com, one of the best sites covering the world of media analysis and commentary. My colleague is Ainsley Andre, and he joins us live from Long Island, right here on Tamari Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for Ainsley, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Ainsley, we may have lost you on the phone. Give us a call back. 646-652-2906, and we'll get you back on the air. Remember, coming your way on Tuesday, we will have a two-hour edition of Tamari Televised to open up 2018. And my lead guests will be the creators, co-stars, and executive producers of Freeform's new series, Alone Together, Esther Pavitsky and Benji Aflalo. They're joining us live as our lead guests. That's Tuesday, day after New Year's, 3:30 Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tamari Televised. Somehow or other, Ainsley got dropped off our line. Ainsley, give us a call back, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you back on the air. And while you get your call back in, I want to let you know that Ainsley's top five choices were from number five, Superstore, number four, from Preacher AMC series, it's on the summer, number three, Blackish, number two, The Good Place, and number one, Game of Thrones. Okay, Ainsley, I think we have you back. Are you there?
Yeah, sorry about that. Technical difficulty.
Okay, there we go. Let's talk about three, four, and five. Two companies out of the three. Let's talk about them first. First, Blackish, which had, a fantastic year on ABC this season. And also Superstore, America Priority series.
Yeah. Superstore and Blackish are both really great shows. Superstore, I think, just really nailed the market that they just found like a small piece of that workplace type comedy that nobody really hit, but it was in all of our faces. The big box stores, you know, Walmarts and Targets and Kmarts and all that stuff, nobody's explored that really yet on television, and they put together like a really, again, a lovable cast, and America Ferrara's great as the lead, and she plays really well off of the gentleman who plays Jonah. I forget his name at the moment.
And Blackish, what Anthony Anderson, what the creator Kenya Barris and his writing team do with that show, it's incredibly creative. And of course, they got the new Freeform spinoff, Ronish, which has already received some wonderful reviews.
Yeah, Ronish looks really good. To go back to Blackish, I really like Blackish. I think Anthony Anderson really came into his own with the show. He's been around for years in various movies and doing stand-up comedy before that, but this show is like really it's a perfect fit for him. Again, I couldn't imagine anybody else playing him. I think Kenya Barris does a great job of capturing the essence of just black people in general. I'm always watching the show and I'm always like, yes, yes. So, I don't know. It's a really good show, and it's a way to shine light on a culture without like excluding anybody. You know what I mean? So, and it's always in the vein of education and trying to teach people more about this culture that maybe they've had some preconceptions about.
Yeah. I mentioned before you got back on, the number four was Preacher. And this is a show that AMC It just seems that it quietly or semi-quietly draws a following, and the following is getting bigger and bigger. It really came bigger in its second season this summer.
Yeah, that was another one that snuck up on me. By the time I saw it, I think the first season was already almost done or had finished or something like that. But when I started watching it, I was like, this is crazy. It has like this dark kind of like a serious tone, but it's stylized and it's very cool. It's a badass show. I must have threw around the word badass like 11 times in my article. But, all the characters are really cool. I love, what is her name? I'm trying to think. Tulip. Tulip, played by Ruth Negga. She just nails that whole don't mess with me, but she still has this vulnerable quality. The three leads are all super likable. The snarky vampire friend, the preacher with the dark past, and his outlaw girlfriend. I mean, it doesn't really get better than that. And I really wasn't expecting to get all of that from watching the show when I first started.
Mm-hmm. And number two, you have an NBC comedy that was critically acclaimed in its first season, got into a second season, it's getting more acclaim now. We had the creator of the show on last year, and that was The Good Place.
The Good Place is amazing. I love The Good Place. I was really on the fence about whether or not I would put it number one, but it is it's a great, great show. It's like fresh, and it's a new concept. It has its own like lore and rules to it that they let you learn more and more about as you go along, and it's like it's rich but it makes sense. It's I don't know. Ted Danson is amazing on the show. Kristen Bell is amazing. Everybody's amazing on the show, to be honest. I think it's really the common denominator is like putting together these really likable casts. Who can play well off of each other? Because that's who I'm coming back to see is these friends go through whatever they're going through.
Okay, so before we get into what we're looking forward to next year and how you see Fleming go, let's unveil our picks for the best show of the year. You first.
The best show of the year, number one on my list, is HBO's Game of Thrones. There was no way at the end of the day I could justify not putting Game of Thrones as number one. It's an amazing show. It's getting close to the end now, and people have their opinions about the last season that just passed, but I loved it. I loved every bit of it, and I'm really excited to see what's coming up next. This is the only show that I have locked myself in a room for a week straight to just plow through every season leading up to the most recent episode. It's Game of Thrones. I mean, it doesn't really get better. It's magic and dragons and medieval fights, and I don't know what's not to love about it.
Yeah, absolutely. For most of this year, I was going to put two shows in. I was going to do Handmaid's Tale, which won the Emmy Award for Best Drama, a brilliant show. Bruce Miller was on our program, and I'm thrilled that we did have him when the show was on the air. And I think it definitely was the zeitgeist show of the year. And one of the shows that would have, actually two more that would have been on my list, had a shot at the top. One was American Crime, all three seasons, but the third season I thought was absolutely brilliant. I think the critics really gave this show a pass. John Ridley and what he did with that show in front of behind the camera was marvelous. I still think it's ABC's best series since NYPD Blue. And I give them credit for keeping it on the air for three seasons. And I thought this was the best season of the bunch. Another show that I thought I wish had gotten more attention, I hope it does from the Peabody's next year, is Underground. I thought Ishaan's performance as Harriet Tubman and one of the best episodes of the year, directed by Anthony Hemingway, written by Misha Green and Joe Posokic, was the episode, basically a one actor, where Harriet Tubman, a one-woman performance that was absolutely amazing, addresses a group of white abolitionists. I thought that episode was one of the great hours of television this year. And should have won a bunch of awards. Hopefully next year it gets the Peabody. But my pick for the number one show of this year, Mr. Robot on USA Network. Sam Esmail and crew in their third season on USA came through with the goods. Every episode had something spectacular about it. The fifth episode, which looked like it was done in one take throughout, showed commercial-free on USA, was absolutely brilliant. Robbie Malek shows why his performance is one of the most unique in terms of television. The cast is sensational. Todd Campbell should win an Emmy Award next year for his photography. He was nominated this year. And Matt Quayle, who won the Emmy this year for music, shows why he's one of the best composers around in the medium. I just thought Mr. Robot had it all, and I can't wait to see season four and how they try to top this one.
Yeah, I agree. Mr. Robot's an amazing show. That was a great choice.
So, Izzy, what are you looking forward to in 2018? What are your first few picks of what we should be paying attention to?
I think it's going to be a year of returning seasons, recurring favorites. I'm really interested in the next season of Westworld. Really interested in the next season of Hulu's Future Man. I'm not sure if that's set to come out this next year. Maybe that's set for 2019, but hopefully it is set for next year. The next season of Insecure, I'm looking out for. Game of Thrones, I don't think is this coming year. It might be next year, for 2019, I mean. But yeah, just there's a lot of shows coming back. Rick and Morty is a favorite of mine, and hopefully they'll have another season by next year. Last time it took them a year and a half to come out with a new season, so I don't know. But yeah, I think Westworld might be at the top of my list of what I'm waiting for, you know, besides Game of Thrones, obviously.
Yeah, totally agree. Ainsley, I'm looking forward to a lot of new shows debuting next year. I'm looking forward to, but I'm also looking forward to one returning, and that's American Crime Story in January. The Yana Disfache set of episodes, which I understand are really, really good. I'm looking forward to a lot of stuff on Netflix. Netflix has a lot to live up to. They had an amazing year, I thought, this year in terms of the quality of their shows, One Day at a Time, Glow, 13 Reasons Why, et cetera, et cetera. I'm looking forward to the second season of those shows. But they have a lot of interesting shows on the fire, including a revival of Lost in Space, a new show called Altered Carbon, which is premiering in February, and also maybe the first stuff from Shonda Rhimes, and also the first series made for television by the Coen brothers, which I understand is coming out in the spring of the summer. I'm also looking forward to Hulu's new series Castle Rock, based on the work of Stephen King. And coming up in February, The Looming Tower, which is a miniseries dealing with the World Trade Center bombing. And I hear it has a marvelous cast. And I think it's going to be, it could be a big contender for the Emmy Awards next fall. I'm also looking forward to what Facebook Watch does. I think this could be the sleeper story. Is Facebook Watch doing more scripted, they're doing a lot of unscripted. They also brought back the Nicole Byer series. Lucy Zagnacola was on MTV. And I think Zuckerberg is going to put some money and some muscle into scripted television. One of the shows I also think to watch out for is the new version of Step Up. The YouTube Red will debut at the end of January from Lionsgate. I've seen the clips for it. It looks really, really good. And I would not be surprised if YouTube steps it up in terms of doing more scripted TV.
Yeah, I mean, those sound good. I think, I don't know how I feel about, I don't know if the concept of watching TV shows on Facebook has, grown on me yet, but, I mean, why not? We're watching it everywhere else, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to catch Ainsley's work, just go to www.mediavillage.com. I promise you it's well worth reading. And that goes for all the great media commentary from people like Ed Martin, Stuart Elliott, yours truly, and Jack Meyer and a whole bunch of other folks. Media Village, great, great site. I write for it, so does Ainsley, and a lot of great people do too. Check it out anytime you like, www.mediavillage.com. Ainsley, Andre, thank you again for being with us. Pleasure to have you on for the very first time. Hope we do it again next year. And in the meantime, have yourself a fantastic start. And great viewing all throughout 2018.
Thanks, man. You too. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. A pleasure. Take care.
You too.
Anthony Andre joining us live from Long Island. Remember, we are coming your way again next Tuesday and Friday, same as this week. That's the day after New Year's and the Friday after New Year's. 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. We start things off in 2018 with a two-hour special edition. And joining us at the top will be, from the new Freeform comedy, Alone Together, the co-stars, creators and executive producers, Ed Wibitsky and Benji Aflalo. Then, Stephen Dose, the executive producer of Discovery's The Interrogation Room. And from the new BYU TV game show, Just Like Mom and Dad, Marvel Media Chief Executive Officer, Mark Bishop. It's all coming your way Tuesday, 2nd of January, 2018, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Remember, if you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Also check out the podcast on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, on iTunes, and also on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to a store near you, Apple Store that is, or order it online. And remember, we love hearing from you. What did you think about television this year? What are you hoping for next year, both in programming and technology? What do you think about what Anthony and Anthony have to say? Let us know. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. Don't forget, that's how you get involved in our Conference Review Question of the Week. And our regular feature is Show to Know. If it's a TV show you like, if you feel it deserves more attention it's getting, let me know, and we will highlight it. So all you have to do, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. And before we leave you, we want to extend what we usually do at this time, the credit roll, to some people that have been very special to us all year long here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. First of all the guests we've had on all year, all the publicists from the various broadcast networks, cable networks, likes of Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, syndicators, multicast channels, technology companies, et cetera, thank you for all the help you did in arranging our shows. Thank you to the whole staff at Blog Talk Radio, and more recently, the gang at iHeartRadio as well. Thank you also to the folks on Facebook and Twitter who like us regularly, including the about 460-something Twitter followers that we now have. Also, thank you to everybody that's at MediaVillage.com, which I write for their support of my efforts there and on the show at large. Thank you as well to my family, mom and dad, brother Gary, sister Stephanie, my family and friends. Thank you to all the Greg at Landmark Worldwide that listen to the show, my friends and colleagues there. By the way, I hope you make, if you haven't done the Landmark Forum already, I hope you make 2018 the year you do it. It will make a big difference to the quality of your life. And again, thank all of you. You make this show work. Week in, week out. That's how we got to 10 years on the air, and we're now in year 11, thanks to you. Remember, if you like our show, please tell a friend and listen to us live so that you can get involved by our phone line and chat room. The show is more interactive and even greater when you do. Okay? And remember, like I said, we enjoy hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not through those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Any sort of Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Farmer, executive content producer, and the co-founders of BTR, Al Levy, and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we tell us brought to you by our great sponsor all year long, Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. All of the Blog Talk Radio and IR Radio, thank you for listening today and all year long. Please have a fantastic end of 2017 and a great safe start to your new year. We're back Tuesday, January 2nd, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here. You know where. Blog Talk Radio and the IR Radio Podcast Network. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.